You're listening to the Tupten Children Podcast.
Let's cultivate our motivation. And again, coming back to our great opportunity to learn the dark, the fact that we have an intelligent mind, and all the external conditions, health and material wherewithal. We've met a teacher, access to the teachings and so on. Live in a place where we have freedom of speech and we can actually practice the teachings. So instead of taking our opportunity for granted, instead of complaining about this is wrong and that is wrong, let's just see everything we have going for us in our life and make a strong determination to take advantage of it. Especially because we don't know how long this opportunity will last. And we don't know what will happen after this life is over. And so the best way really to make our life meaningful is generating the bodhicitta. Even if it's fabricated in our mind, we have to deliberately cultivate it all the time. Still, we're planting seeds of bodhicitta in our mind stream, and eventually one day it will be spontaneous, it will become a bodhisattva. So let's have a strong mind that's willing to create all the causes for full awakening and take joy in that process of creating the causes, even if things in our life don't go exactly the way we want them to. Everything we experience can be integrated into the path and propel us towards full awakening. So with that kind of determination, then let's generate the bodhicitta and listen tonight as one step along that path to full awakening. Okay, so where we left off in the Precious Garland, okay, we were talking about we're in chapter 3, yeah, the collection, chapter 3 is about the collection of merit and the collection of wisdom, which are the two prerequisites for attaining Buddhahood, and we're talking now about the collection of merit expanded. And so merit is all, collection of merit are all the bodhisattva deeds, all generosity, ethical conduct, fortitude, doing good deeds, helping others, benefiting society, you know, all that kind of active stuff. And so here in this section, Nagarjuna is talking to the king about how to create merit through governing. So it's a very good example, you know, in the thought training teachings, which were developed several centuries after this text, but are rooted in this text. The thought training teachings really emphasize the point that everything in our daily life can be transformed into the Dharma if we look at it in a proper way, and if we have a bodhicitta motivation. And so basically, what Nagarjuna is doing here is telling the king how to create a lot of merit just by doing what he's going to do anyway, which is governing the kingdom, but doing it with a virtuous motivation and governing it in a proper way with real care and concern for the citizens of the kingdom. So instead of exploiting them, instead of taking them for granted, instead of manipulating and using them, he's saying, he's giving the king many detailed practical instructions for how to benefit his citizens. And in reading this and thinking about it, you know, you just wish that you could do a class on this for for our government.
Yes.
And I really loved your BBC talking about Justin Trudeau and the policies he's implemented and relating them to specific verses in this text. So, you know, I just wish that all leaders could kind of study this kind of thing, especially if you're working in government, and benefit from Nagarjuna's wisdom. Because the basic idea behind it is if you benefit the people that, you know, you're representing or that you're governing, they will be happy, and that will make your own life easier. It'll make the kingdom, you know, or the country calmer. And by your doing these actions with bodhicitta motivation, you create infinite merit. So it's a win-win situation for everybody. Whereas, you know, if you want to tax, you know, tax people too much, or tax the poor people and let the rich people get away, or play partiality for who you work for in your governing, your mind is skewed. There's not a positive motivation. There's a motivation for one's own fame, one's own gain, playing favorites, you know, in order to get the support of certain people, because it improves your image and your ego status and so on. And so the whole motivation's rotten, and then all the actions that are done are harmful to the people around you, and so you wind up, you know, creating the cause for an awful rebirth, obscuring your mind with more negative karma, and then living in a very unhappy way because the people around you are complaining because they don't have enough to eat, and so on. Yeah? So the Nagarjuna is really smart with this whole thing. Okay, so here in the particular section that we're on, he's talking about 14 particular ways of benefiting the people, into specific instructions that he was giving. You know, so he was talking about leaving water containers out, you know, so that the people who are traveling have water to drink, and creating public parks with pavilions so, you know, the old people can sit there and talk and the young people can play, and, you know, all these kinds of things. So that's where we are at the moment. And where I will continue with verse 246. Okay, actually in 245 he was saying, at the sites of the cisterns, you know, where you place water for the travelers, place shoes, parasols, water filters, tweezers for removing thorns, needles, thread, and fans. You know? So this is kind of like the road stops that we have, you know? Except, you know, you have Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola and
Cheetos
and, you know, so everything that's not very good for you, that's going to ruin your health, and, you know, and it's charged for. Whereas the way Nagarjuna is speaking here, you know, the king just out of his own wealth puts all these things there for the benefit of the citizens, you know, so... I think that would be really nice if some of our politicians, out of their own wealth, put things out for the benefit of the citizens. Wouldn't that be cool?
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Yeah. So, 246, at the cisterns also place the three kinds of fruit, the three kinds of salt, honey, eye medicine, and antidotes to poison. Also write formulas for medicinal treatment and spells. And 247, at the cisterns also place ointments for the body, feet, and head, cradles, ladles, and ewers. What are ewers?
Pitchers.
Oh, okay. Okay, pitchers, brass pots, axes, and so on. Okay, so the eighth of the 14 here is in 246, yeah. And so the three kinds of, the 246 is really talking about medicines. And so when people in your kingdom are sick or travelers are sick, you have the medicines out there. So there's three medicinal fruits, which to the day, nowadays they use in Indian medicine. And I know when I was helping my teacher make the different blessed pills, we use these. Okay, so the three are yellow myrobalam, balearic myrobalam, and emblic myrobalam. And I have the terms, but I don't think I can. Terminalia cibula, Terminalia balearica, and Emblica officinalis. I never took Latin. Okay, but these are the three, you know, those three medicinal fruits. And then butter and honey are medicines for certain nervous disorders due to the imbalance of the qi or the internal winds. Medicine for the eyes, you know, especially in ancient India, and India nowadays, because there's a lot of dirt, very easy to get eye infections. And antidotes to poisons, because people could be traveling, have eaten the wrong thing, upset stomach, or, you know, not knowing the plants in that new place, eaten the wrong, something that made them ill. And then also, he says, print clear instructions on how to take the medicine for each particular illness. And then, since in ancient time they also use mantras, and nowadays too, they use the recitation of mantras to cure different illnesses, write down those mantras and put them and the medicinal substances in the rest stops near the cisterns. Even nowadays in Tibetan society, they use mantra a lot to cure illnesses. And sometimes the people will recite the mantra themselves. Very often they'll go to a lama who will recite the mantra and then blow on them. And then that's considered like helping to cure the particular illness. Then 247, that's talking about the ninth of the 14 things. Okay, so in the enclosures where the water cisterns are located, put oil and other kind of ointments, and, you know, hand lotion and skin cream, you know, whatever is needed for the body, feet, and the head, so that, you know, your skin is in good condition and it's, you know, it's protected. And in case there's some kind of surface wound, put some hydrogen peroxide or some, what's it called, the stuff in the tube? Starts with an N.
Neosporin.
Yeah. Put some neosporin out there. Okay. And then, listen to this, leave cradles for the babies. Yeah? Because you're traveling with the family, leave a cradle so you can put your baby to sleep in. Put out jugs to collect water, axes so that you can go chop up firewood if you need to make a fire for cooking. And then put pots and pans and pitchers and utensils so that you can cook your family a meal if you're traveling. Yeah? Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Instead of Cheetos. Yeah. And then, so, I mean, imagine if you were a ruler and you could put this in the kingdom and think of how happy your citizens are going to be, and being a citizen and thinking of how happy you are to have all of this stuff and how much you would love and respect your ruler because of it. Yeah. Okay, then 248 and 249. In cool, shady spots, make small cisterns filled with potable water and provided with sesame, rice, grains, foods, and molasses. At the openings of anthills, have trustworthy persons like Venerable Senkei constantly place food and water, molasses, and piles of grain. Okay, so verse 248 talks about the 10th one. So near where these cisterns are, have shady areas so people can relax under the shade. And then place different grains that people can eat. You have different grains and sesame and molasses, oil, various foods, and then make sure that all the cisterns are filled with potable water, not in plastic bottles that are going to trash the land. Okay. And then 249 is, saying don't just take care of the people, but take care of all the living beings in your kingdom. So keep the anthills supplied by food. Yeah. So put water, sugar, oil from the grains, near the entrance to the anthills so the ants don't have to go far and get trampled on. Okay. And also so that they don't move into your house. So notice that it says put all this food for the ants outside where you want them to live. Don't put it inside thinking that you'll attract them and then catch them and take them out, because that doesn't happen. They move inside and they nest inside. It's very interesting because we had that conversation here. When I went to Germany, there was another nun who there were ants like all in the cabin I stayed in, and she put food for the ants right outside the cabin thinking that they would collect there and eat out there and then go away, and all they would do is collect out there and then go inside and nest. So I shared our experience here. Yeah. Okay, then verse 250 and 251. Both before and after each meal, always offer in a pleasant manner food to hungry ghosts, dogs, ants, birds, and so on, and cats. And 251, always care extensively for places in the world that are oppressed or where crops have failed, that have suffered harm, or where there is plague, or that have been conquered in a war. And then the first line of 252, or the first two lines, provide seeds and food to farmers who have fallen on hard times. Okay, so here really talking about very expansive aid to different people. So in 250, this is the 12th suggestion, is, before and after eating, then make offerings to the hungry ghost. So in the Chinese tradition, they offer to the hungry ghost before you eat. You have the seven grains in the bowl and it's multiplied, and you chant and take them out before you eat. In the Tibetan tradition, we take rice or bread or something, put it in our hand, and then say the mantra to transform it into something that the hungry ghost can eat. We snap our fingers and toss it. So making offerings to the hungry ghost. Feed also the dogs and the cats who are around in India. Even nowadays, so many dogs, just everywhere, and malnourished and with fleas and mange. Yeah, it's really rather pitiful. Feed the birds, feed the ants. In other words, realize that you live in a world surrounded by all sorts of other living beings and help them out. So I think we do this. I mean, in the winter we put out cracked corn for the ducks, for the deer. the cracked corn's for the turkeys, and the hay is for the deer, and the salt blocks for the deer. Okay, and we feed the ticks, although not voluntarily. Certainly the birds, we feed the birds, we feed the turkeys all year round, and whatever other living beings come by, we try and take care of them. We've adopted several stray kitties. Try and do what we can. And then in 251, okay, here, this is really talking about strong domestic policy and foreign policy. So always care extensively for places in the world that are oppressed. Okay, so the economy's not going well, the people are oppressed by the government, or they're starving, they're unhappy, you know. And when Nagarjuna is saying to care extensively, he means send them food, clothing, shelter, and wisdom and medicine. He doesn't say pick up arms and go fight on their behalf. And he doesn't say make offerings of weapons, you know, so that they can fight for themselves. And he doesn't say send military advisors. Yeah, it's very interesting in here to listen to what he says, okay? So, so help the areas that are oppressed or where the crops have failed, where the people are suffering a famine or a drought, you know, so they're oppressed by their king or by natural disasters, maybe tsunamis, too much rain, too little rain. I mean, in India, again, to this day it happens. You have droughts and floods and people fleeing their homes in huge numbers of people. Okay, send emergency aid to areas where the populace is stricken by epidemics. So when there's Ebola, when there's, how do you pronounce it, Zika? Yeah, when there's Zika, send aid, you know. Send medicine, send doctors, send nurses, do something. When there's an epidemic, don't just sit on your tush and, you know, wait for somebody else to do it. Okay, where there's epidemics, again, where there's natural disasters, places where there's plague, you know, well, that falls under epidemic, and where places that have been conquered by war. Yeah, so send them humanitarian aid. So in Syria, you know, send the people food and clothing and so on instead of arms. And do what we can to bring about peace and at least keep the people alive. Okay, so help, and then once the war ends, help the people to rebuild their homes, plant the seeds, and recover from illnesses. So, you know, after World War II, it was quite interesting because wars nowadays aren't like the wars used to be. Wars you used to have a time when one party surrendered and there was an end of the war. You know, First World War, Second World War. Somebody surrendered, the war's over, everybody stops fighting and starts rebuilding. And so after World War II, there was the Marshall Plan. And so the countries that we had been bombing before, primarily Japan and Germany, we now put so much money in to help rebuild them. This is, again, you know, the craziness of human beings. We bomb things and destroy them, and then we give money to rebuild them. Yeah, that's what's been going on in Gaza for a long time, except they haven't been rebuilding as fast as they've been destroying. But, you know, help people who are recovering from wars, especially if you were the people who destroyed their homes, their crops, their industry, and whatever. Because especially after the war, the people are quite desperate. I mean, I look at pictures of war zones and so on, and I don't even know where you would start rebuilding. Yeah, you look at the picture of Hiroshima, it's because it's been out so much because Obama's going there. Where do you even start when there's that? You know, you look at pictures of Dresden or London, you know, where do you start? How do you even get the machinery in to take away the rubble?
People do it.
Well,
many women did that. Most of the women.
Yeah, I heard that too in Germany because so many of the men had been killed. It was the women who helped to rebuild. But still, I mean, when a whole building falls down, you can't just take it away brick by brick. You need some help. So, you know, I mean, it's amazing to me that people rebuild after these kinds of things. But you really have no choice, do you? Do you? You know, you have to. Then in places where the farmers don't have seeds, or seedlings, provide seeds and seedlings so they can plant their crops and help their family. If they need farming tools, give them farming tools. If they need animals to help plow the land, give them that. You know, you might try a John Deere tractor or two. That would help out. You know, so help people who need help due to natural disasters or warfare or just hard times. Okay. Then Genserin Pache made a comment here. He said, wealthy countries nowadays don't have these kinds of visible problems. Actually, we do. You know? The lamas don't see those problems. Nobody takes them to the board, to the inner city where you have boarded up buildings, or to, you know, the area around where Hurricane Katrina was, or where the floods in Galveston and southern Texas are, and so on. There certainly are areas in our countries like that. But he said, you know, you don't have so many, so that's almost like Pure Lands. But in Nepal, Tibet, India, China, and Africa, many people are afflicted by such terrible hardships. One thing that we haven't had here in America is an invasion by another country, where we've had to defend our own land. And that has, in many ways, given us, I think, a very narrow view about what war is and what other countries go through when they're attacked, because we haven't had it in our history. Yeah? At least not since the white people took over. Yeah, the Native Americans were invaded. And so Kenzerimchi ends with such generosity done with bodhicitta is the collection of merit. So there it is, you know. We can help as much as we can. If we can't help physically, we can certainly send in donations. You know, that doesn't mean we have to donate to every charity that contacts us, but we can, you know, pick out certain ones and do what we can. Okay, then the rest of verse 252 and 253, here he's talking about more economic policies. So he says, eliminate excessive taxes and reduce the portion of products taxed. Protect citizens from debt, eliminate new tolls, and reduce excessive tolls. Eliminate the suffering of those who wait at your door with their petitions unanswered. Okay, so this is again how to govern property properly, how to give things to others. Yeah, and here he's giving another set of 9 instructions, okay? So the first one is to eliminate high taxes that were imposed by previous kings. So, you know, this is certainly going to be taxes on them. They didn't have a middle class then, so it's mostly about the general citizens who are often poor. In our situation now, it would be, you know, give tax breaks to the middle class and especially the poor. And, you know, the rich can afford to pay more taxes. And especially if you need to build walls, you know, you need some money to do it. So might as well tax your friends instead of the poor people. You know, because this is, you know, you look, like in Ferguson, one of the big complaints were that the people who were poor were the ones who were getting stopped for traffic tickets. They were getting fined. They couldn't pay the fine, so they would get imprisoned. Then that would mean that they couldn't work. They would get fired from their job. Then the whole family goes more and more in debt, is poorer and poorer. The person can't pay you know, the basic fee that, you know, traffic ticket thing, then they can't pay bail on, you know, why they're imprisoned. And it's just horrible for the poor. It just ruins families. So this is the kind of thing that Nagarjuna is saying that rulers should not do, because it's, you know, definitely an unnecessary burden on the poor. Yeah. And when you think about it, you know, even for arrests over small things, you know, like, you know, drug possession or something like that, the poor can't pay the money for bail, and so again lose their work, wind up in debt. The children go unattended because the parents are in jail. The rich can hire an attorney and go and fight it, and not, you know, they're out of jail on bail, and they can fight the original fine or original offense, so they don't have to pay any fees. You know, so something's wrong. You know, something's not right in that kind of system of governance, where people really don't have equal rights and equal possibilities. Okay, so yeah. So don't impose taxes that burden people. Reduce the amount of the items that are taxed. So it could mean don't tax as many items, or if you have a minimum thing above that amount that you tax, then raise that amount so that people can possess more before they're taxed. So again, these are all things that benefit the most vulnerable in society. Then protect those who are impoverished due to debt. So you talk to Charles Dickens about this, debtor's prison. And, you know, we have our own form of debtor's prison in a way now in this country, even though we wanted to abolish that. So, try and protect those who are overwhelmed by debt. You know, teach kids in school how to balance a checkbook, teach them how to spend money wisely. I don't remember ever being taught that in high school. Were you? You know? And so you get kids who you know, don't know anything about money management, and then they go out and pretty soon they're in credit card debt. And, you know, that becomes a huge burden. Where if, you know, some adults actually taught you, especially in school, you know, here's how you balance a checkbook, here's how you set up a budget, here's how you think to restrain yourself from getting something you really want today, you know, by saving up your money and getting it later. Yeah. So, you know, to teach kids about this, that's a way of protecting people from debt. And then saying as a new king, eliminate tolls altogether or reduce the tolls that are burdensome. Okay. And when merchants come from other places, don't be greedy for their possessions, imposing heavy taxes on them, like a 45% tariff, confiscating or impounding their goods, or refusing to let them depart. Yeah, without paying fines and things like that. And if people come and they have petitions and they want to meet with you, don't have a huge bureaucracy that makes them stand waiting for weeks and months before they can get their petition answered. But, you know, try and have an efficient government so that people's needs can be taken care of quickly. And, you know, because that really affects families. Wouldn't you like Nagarjuna as, like, a special presidential counsel? Yeah, he would be really good. Okay.
It depends on whether the person listening to him takes their advice or not.
Yeah.
But then you have Congress.
Well, Nagarjuna has a way of getting through to people. Let's hope. Okay, then on 254, eliminate bandits from your own land and in others' lands as well. keep prices level and place the proper value on goods. Okay? So eliminate bandits in your land, in the neighborhood land. So, you know, people who are trafficking in drugs, I mean, certainly the cartels, people who are trafficking in people, you know, pirates, we still have pirates nowadays on the seas who are attacking ships. This could be terrorists, yeah? So eliminate all of these. He doesn't say how to, you know, but, you know, definitely he doesn't say, you know, pull out your guns and go get them, okay? But do your best to eliminate, you know, those kind of stresses on the citizens. And if people have been harmed or traumatized by robbers, give them what they need. Yeah. So isn't that an interesting thing? You know, you've been the victim of a crime, so you deserve help. Wow. Yeah? Instead of blame, instead of something else, yeah, that the community comes in and helps you. And during times of scarcity, don't allow people to overcharge others. So when gas is scarce, don't allow the people to raise the price on gas, or when food is scarce, you know, to overcharge people. But keep the prices at the level that most people can afford. So very good policies here, huh? And then some more things about... Okay, so if I'm going to... Okay, if I'm going to number the nine that I said he was giving. First one was eliminate the taxes by the previous king. Second, reduce the amount that people are taxed. Third, protect the impoverished, those who are impoverished due to debt. Fourth, eliminate new tolls if you're a new king. Fifth, reduce the tolls that are burden. Sixth, when merchants come, you know, help them and answer their petitions quickly. And seventh, eliminate the bandits. And eighth, ensure that the prices are fair and proper. And then ninth is we're coming to in verse 255, where he says, be thoroughly familiar with all that your advisors say, and always do what is healthy for the world. Just as you pay attention to whatever you think will benefit you, so too pay attention to what you think will benefit others. So the ninth one was, he's saying, you know, be thoroughly familiar with what your advisors say, but always do what's good for the world. Okay? So listen, because your advisors are going to want to talk to you, and they have knowledge of different fields, they have their own evaluations and assessment of different things, but, yeah, also look at their attitudes, look at their intentions, look at their motivations, because they could be feeding you skewed data and skewed information. In other words, don't have lobbyists as your advisors, okay? Because this is what lobbyists do, isn't it? You know, they're advisors, but they skew the information. So you have to be able, as a wise ruler, to really know, you know, what are people's motivations, yeah? And who's trying to pull one over on somebody else, and who's trying to be famous, and who's power hungry, and, you know, you have to be aware of all those kinds of things, and then really do what is best for the entire world, yeah? Yeah, and so discern the advice you get and see if it's actually good advice. So this is why, you know, presidents have advisors and so on, but they really need to, you know, think about what their advisors tell them, and because the ultimate responsibility lies with the leader. And so if the leader just trusts an advisor without really thinking about what is said, they could wind up in a lot of hot water. Not warm, but scalding. Okay? And then if you know, don't let yourself be taken in by greedy and scheming advisors. So this goes, you know, not only for government, but in business, you know, even in a monastery. You know, you have to really assess people's motivations and intentions and make decisions not based on partiality, but what's beneficial for the long-term purpose of the entire institution, you know, to benefit people. I mean, you don't put the institution before people. The institution is to serve the people, yeah, but you don't let the people, kind of misuse the institution for their own power and benefit and pleasure. Okay, and then verse 256, he was saying, you know, just as we pay attention to what benefits us, pay attention to what you think will benefit others. So, you know, look at the big picture and take other people's concerns, other people's needs as being as important as your own. And don't just tell them what you think they want to hear so you can win the election.
Keep your promises.
Yeah, keep your promises as best as you can. Sometimes you can't, but do your best. I was reading an article today where they had asked some experts to assess the viability of deporting 11 million, illegal immigrants and building a wall. And it's like all the experts are saying, you know, if you want to deport that many people, you need a police state. Yeah. And if you want to build a wall, you're going to need a whole lot of money. Yeah. Where's that going to come from? I don't, you know, all the Mexicans have to do is say no. What's he going to do, invade them?
Oh, no.
Maybe Donald's going to use his money. Maybe Donald will use his money.
Right.
You know, his businesses have been loaning money to his campaign. So he hasn't been paying for all the expenses himself. Once his campaign gets some money, they will pay back the loans to all the Trump businesses. That's an interesting one, isn't it? And he's also wanting the Republican Party's connections, because he doesn't want to pay for his own election funds after he was spent so much time telling people that he's not going to be indebted to businesses and so on because he's going to pay for it himself. Well, it's reality TV. Kind of, I never watched reality TV. This is quite good enough for me, actually. Yeah? You have to look at it as a comedy show. Okay, then verse 257. Okay, and 258. He says, like the earth, water, fire, and wind, wild herbs, and the plants of the forest, make yourself and your possessions available for the general enjoyment of all. That's talking about give everything away. So treat your own possessions, you know, because the earth, especially in ancient India, you know, not every square inch was owned. You know, nowadays it's like, you know, there's some kind of legal deed on every square inch. But in those times, I mean, there were like miles and miles between settlements and nobody owned the land. So the earth, you know, was free. the water was free. You didn't have to have treaties. Sometimes the people fought over the water. Fire, wind, yeah, wild herbs in the forest you could go and pick. Plants in the forest. So all these things were available just for everybody. Yeah, you didn't have to worry if they belonged to someone or not. They were available and there was plenty and you could take. So he's saying, make your own possessions like that. Have that kind of attitude that whatever I have is for the enjoyment and the use of everybody. That sounds like a wonderful idea, but when people ask us to borrow something, it's hard to lend them something, isn't it? Yeah? If it's something that you really like, that you're afraid, if you know, somebody wants to borrow your car, for example, your new car. Someone wants to borrow your new clothes. They may spill spaghetti sauce all over it. It's sometimes hard. We always think, I want to do this, I want to be like this. But when it actually happens, sometimes it's very difficult. You don't look like it's difficult for you. I'll speak for myself. Sometimes I find it very difficult. Okay. But I'll start borrowing your stuff and see if you say yes automatically or not.
I can write you a letter asking to borrow Haroldina. Oh. Then they'll see.
Right. Yeah, that's a good thing, you know. Would we loan Haroldina out in the middle of summer? What'd he say? No, Haroldina, we need Haroldina. Okay. But it's an aspiration to cultivate. And I was reading something today, was it this? It was something where, when we try and do something, and like we try and be generous, or we try and act according to a certain aspiration, but our self-centeredness blocks it, instead of beating ourselves up about it, and I'm so terrible, and I'm so awful, and I'm so selfish, and look at me. The advice was just generate the aspiration again. Yeah? And it was like, duh. But you know, why don't we think of that? Because we are so habituated with beating up on ourselves when we don't do something correct or live up to our own expectations. And the advice was just, well, generate the aspiration again, because as many times as you generate it, that much, then many times you're implanting that thought in your own mind, and the more it's implanted, then the easier it's going to be eventually to act it out. You know? Because feeling guilty and being down on ourselves doesn't make our mind any happier. It doesn't combat our stinginess at all. Yeah, it just makes us more tight. But okay, we didn't succeed in giving. Generate the aspiration. Keep trying. Okay. Oh, here it is. Yeah. Kansa Rinpoche. Yeah, I knew I read it somewhere. It was when I was preparing for the class. So I'll read you what Kansa Rinpoche said. About this. He said, if your mind will not let you give to others, then repeatedly make the aspiration, may all I own, including my possessions and body, be used by others, and may others benefit from this. Thinking like this, even for a short while, will increase your capacity to give later on. Try to give all you can according to your capability, and train in and embrace your wish to give. In brief, be generous whenever you can. Yeah, I think that's pretty good advice.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you just shortened. You made a connection. It may not be instantaneous, but okay, now you have the thought. You missed it, but you remembered.
Yeah. was at Kinsarimache's room one time when I was visiting Sarah. He was incredible because, I mean, usually students cook for their teachers. When I came to visit, he insisted on cooking for me. And I came with another person, and Steve was there, Venerable Steve. He insisted on cooking for us, and I kept protesting, and he wouldn't have it, you know. So he would cook for us. He'd put us sitting on chairs. He would sit on the floor. Quite amazing. I mean, it was like so embarrassing. And one time during this, when we were eating there, there was a beggar. His room was inside one of the compound, and it was upstairs. So the beggar came through, you know, where the monk's compound was, and went upstairs to Rinpoche's door. And apparently he asked for a blanket, because Kensa Rinpoche just went right in his room, pulled off a blanket, and gave it to him. Like that. Okay. So, and then verse 258. Even when taking their seventh step, bodhisattvas have the attitude of giving away all their possessions. This produces merit in them that is limitless as the sky itself. Okay, so when bodhisattvas are born in their last life before they become Buddhas, there's, like in the story with the Buddha's birth, they're born and then they take seven steps and raise their hand and says, this is my last life, you know, in samsara. So just as bodhisattvas do that, you know, and that comes naturally, so too just the ability to give everything away is something that they do. So Kensa Rinpoche is saying at the time they take the seven steps and make that proclamation, they haven't yet actualized their goal of full awakening, but they're cultivating the intention to give everything away to others. And then he says, here he's saying again, they protect this marvelous intention from deterioration by repeatedly thinking, may I be able to give my body, wealth, and past, present, and future merit to sentient beings, and may it manifest as whatever they want or need. So thinking this creates merit as extensive as space. So this is very much what the taking and giving meditation is about. This is the giving part of it. Yeah, everything I have, body, possessions, merit, you know, friends, everything you give away without any sense of, you know, but I want it, and if I give it away, I won't have it, and it took me so long to get it that I don't want to give it away. Yeah, so without that kind of needy mind that is so miserable and unhappy. And it's quite amazing, you know, when you meet people who are really poor, or I should say when I met people who were really poor in India, they were often the most generous ones. They didn't have anything, so it was like, you just give it, you just share it. Yeah. Whereas sometimes the people who are wealthy have a harder time. I remember one Rinpoche telling me that when they all came out of Tibet, everybody just was sharing everything, with, you know. And then once they started to reestablish the monasteries and get their own land and start building, then they became less generous with each other. Interesting, isn't it? You would think that as we got more, we would relax, but not necessarily. Okay, now the next verse is going to take a lot of discussion. So, let's pause here. Maybe you have some questions or comments.
Well, yeah? No, I'm just thinking, for those of you who can vote in this country, what is our responsibility for pressing the representatives to make change? Mm. Because right now we're sort of going along with what is, it seems like. But to really make progressive change, what kind of actions can American voters engage in?
Okay, so what actions can American voters engage in besides voting?
Besides voting, new policies.
Yeah, in terms of to influence policy and get things done. One thing is you just start writing to your congresspeople and you start writing to your officials and you sign petitions and you write letters to the newspaper and, you know, you do things in a public way. Or you start a foundation and, you know, I mean, you look at like what Bill Gates is doing, Bill and Melinda are doing for health issues. I mean, they have the money to start a foundation and then give a lot of it away to really work on health issues around the world. So most of us don't have the money to start a foundation, but you know, we can write letters to our congresspeople.
You've also suggested is to get involved and actually become a county commissioner, become a council member, become a mayor of your town.
Yeah.
To really get engaged in the process.
Yeah. So if people have that mentality to, you know, run for city council or
county commissioner
or whatever. Yeah.
And also just on the local level, like the Yes Team project in Newport, mm-hmm. you know, it gets started, it's a nonprofit. It is interacting with the local politicians and, you know,
law enforcement.
Yeah, getting it known, and so people kind of then start stepping up and seeing the need, and then over time it will start getting more funds in legitimate ways.
So getting involved in local nonprofits, spreading the word about them, and then working on a particular area of concern. Because see, I think what happens is our mind thinks, I want to change everything. You know, I mean, we think that I want to change everything. Well, one person can't change everything. Yeah, but what do they say? Think global, but work local. Yeah, so at least start with some local thing, you know, where we can make a difference. Yeah.
It's also having a longer term view.
And having a longer term view.
Because you can't do it like that. But if I look back on what's happened over the last 40 years and actually look at the change in social, all kinds of social issues, it's just astonishing.
Yeah. That's true. If you look over 40 years, it's been
50.
Yeah. Or 50 years, it's been incredible. Yeah. I mean, like, I never thought I would see an African-American president in my lifetime. I never thought I would see a woman possible, hopefully, president in my lifetime.
No.
You know?
No.
I mean, it's big changes. Yeah.
I think another thing that we can do is have our actions match with our aspirations, like in terms of the people that we support, maybe with our businesses, the things that we buy, all those kind of things. Like, let's really support what we say we want with what we do, as opposed to acting against those.
Yeah. Okay. So let's act in accordance with our aspirations. So if we're talking about climate change, let's not get in our car and drive here and there when we don't need to. You know. And if we're talking about climate change, let's make sure we recycle and we don't waste and so on. Yeah. Be consistent. And this is a very important point. I was, one time when I was traveling, I was talking with two people who were both ecology professors at their university. And they were telling me, you know, they were always teaching about taking care of the environment, da, 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 da. And then one day their kids came home and said, Mom and Dad, how come we don't recycle? And all of a sudden, Mom and Dad, the ecology professors, went, oh, yeah, you know, this is something we can step up the plate and do, and need to do, yeah, because sometimes we just zone out, totally zone out. Or we make exceptions for our pet, whatever it is, you know. Like nobody else should just drive around because they need to, but, you know, for my pet, whatever, you know, I feel like doing, then, you know, it's just one time. So it's always just one time for a thousand. It's a thousand ones. This would be a logistic
nightmare
to implement. What would be?
Narcisse actually is referring to the, you know, putting on things for travelers.
The verses
would be a logistic. How would it be a logistic nightmare? I mean, isn't building highways? How in the world do you build highways in a country? I mean, I think that would be a logistic nightmare. You know, putting out water bottles after you build the highways is not a big thing.
But if you have 330 million people on the road taking a water bottle every time they stop.
Yeah. Right.
It seems to be a problem.
Yeah, but you have, you know, reusable bottles.
The anti-cradle lobby could keep this discussion going for 50 years.
It's so funny, someone else just said, I had the same thought. I thought that someone would come and steal all the stuff. I guess it's people.
Oh, that if you put all those things out, somebody come and would steal it.
And so.
Why would somebody steal it? It would be because they needed it.
Well, they might use to sell it.
Or, you know, to resell. But, I mean, it would be nice to...
Why would you buy it if you knew you could get it for free?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this, we're being very narrow in our, at least my first take on all of that. Mm-hmm. I had the same kind of thought, wow, that would be... You just really trust people. But I think if it became part of the societal values, I mean, you wouldn't even think twice about it. It's just there. You use it when you need it. You make sure it's there for the next person. I mean, again, 40, 50 years of it, I mean, it wouldn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
But if you had that mentality, I mean, think about if you were born in a country that did that, and that is the way it is. You wouldn't think twice.
Right. Every
so we just have to do it for two generations.
Yeah. Right. But actually, now, don't they have some cities where there's bicycles that people can ride that belong to the city, and you can just go and ride a bicycle somewhere else, leave it, somebody else gets the bicycle and brings it back. Nobody steals those bicycles. When I was in Copenhagen, you could not imagine the number of bicycles there. Unbelievable. You know, a few people locked their bikes. Most people did not. You know, it's a major European city. Few people lock their bikes. Not all. Yeah, many didn't. Because I was walking by, and I looked, and you know.
In some cities, you can even borrow cars, so they belong to the city or some organization, and you just use your iPhone, you go, you pay some money, and then you get into the next car that's available.
Ah, would be good.
I know in this country mostly private organizations that do the free bikes.
That do the what?
Free bikes.
Free bikes, okay.
Yeah, there's often private organizations. I knew people that would get bike frames and build, put stuff together, you know, parts. And that was what they did for their hobbies, was make bikes available.
Yeah.
Out of parts. But Regina is talking to a ruler here, but I can think of many cases where individuals or groups are doing this kind of thing without waiting for the government. Where there's people coming across the border from Mexico, there are people going out and putting out bottles of water and leaving them there.
Yeah, that's true. Like, don't wait for the government, but act on your... Here he's talking to a ruler, who can do this. But yeah, like you're saying, with people going out and leaving water in the desert so that if people are crossing and they need water, they'll have it.
And what was that group that you told us about coming back from Mexico one time? These women that are all these people coming from Central, from South America, Central America up through Mexico, and they're feeding them? And
when I was there, they were talking about, you know, because a lot of the people in Central America, where it's really horrible and violent, they would come into Mexico and then they would jump on trains and catch rides going north. I mean, it's incredibly, dangerous to do, and now the cartels do horrible things to these people, but this was several years ago. And this person that I met, they would make food bags, and when the trains that would go by, they would throw them to these immigrants, and who would catch them, and then they would have food and water. So I gave a donation to them from the Abbey. So there's, things that we can do just on our own personal level.
And you would have to think when that kind of exchange happens that the people in need are able to relax and build their trust that the system's going to support them. Mm-hmm. So there's no need to jeopardize that kind of trust because look at what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, so it begins to slowly turn the minds and the trust between people changes.
Yeah, it's really a thing of building trust, isn't it? Yeah. And when people receive, then them learning to trust, and then they can give and trust. Yeah.
And people feel valued.
Yes.
You might be feeling a lot of adversity, and then somebody gives them kindness in a situation like that.
Yeah, people feel very valued.
Just acknowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are a lot of hardships that immigrants coming, particularly from South America and Central America, have to go through, and that this country is not perfect, and certainly things appear to be getting worse for immigrants rather than better. But as an immigrant myself, I have to count myself fortunate because coming to this country, even though I was in my teens, I found much more kindness and generosity than I can say discrimination or anger. So I really value and I'm grateful for what this country offered me and my family, coming here with nothing and being able to build a life and for ourselves and our children. So I just want to also for us to know that no country is perfect, but that certainly what we found here was help and hope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, so nobody is perfect, no country's perfect, but as an immigrant, what you found coming here was a lot of kindness and an opportunity to build a new life for yourself, for your kids, and you found a lot of hope and possibility, and you're grateful to this country for that.
Right.
Yeah. And that, I think, is, I mean, my grandparents were immigrants, and that's the same, that was their experience in coming here, too. And I think many of the people now, who are aware of their own immigrant background feel this is what America should be like. You know, is a place where you offer people a new chance on life.
And certainly, to be realistic, it takes work and it takes effort. I mean, it's not something that you're gonna get for free. It's not something that you're just gonna find on the street. But overwhelmingly, the immigrant families that I have been in contact with have the desire and determination to work hard.
Yes.
Certainly, they find the conditions to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been my experience too, especially with Asian immigrants. Immigrants anywhere actually, is the ones who come here. They're willing to work very hard, you know. I know the Cambodian, you know, and the Vietnamese who came from war-torn countries, they come here and, yeah, they're not expecting a handout. They're expecting to work, and that's what they want. So, to be continued.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life, may I pass them by completely all outer and inner hindrances, grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds
of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Yatra Basti